We've driven a few hundred yards away from Chris's lake, and we're on the edge of a field, and we're just in the shade behind a large hedge here that is being very much allowed to flourish. And so many red berries this year. I mean, there's a droop on all the branches, isn't there, Chris?
Matthew, we're sort of celebrating the countryside each week on this podcast that we do. And this year, it's a job to keep pace with the rapid changes and the development. It seems only a few weeks ago we were looking at the May blossom. May is the other name for hawthorn out in the countryside, because it comes into flower in May, as does the other one here, which is the blackthorn, and we investigated that a few weeks back, and we looked down the hedge. The blackthorn is doing the same. The young branches that are over a year old now are just beginning to bend down towards the ground, just under the sheer weight of sloes, which is a blackthorn fruit, and the same with the hawthorn here. Now, hawthorn's the most popular hedging plant in the UK. It was called hagthorn in Saxon times, and they used it as hedging because it's armed in the same way as a blackthorn is, with quite a lot of spines and prickles further down. When we look at some of last year's growth, we can go back a little bit, and there's modified leaves here which have spines on them, and it's really prickly. If you had to cut this by hand, it really gives a good account of itself. So, particularly on the older growth.
Sounds like you speak with experience.
Yes, I had to do these hedges, would you believe, by hand. They were cut every 4, 5, 6 years, depending on how much labour was available on the farm.
Well, what sort of implement would you have used?
Well, it was called a slasher. It's a long handle, usually made of ash, and then a straight blade on the end. Sometimes the blade would be hooked, and that would be called a bill hook, and you either cut completely through, or you just cut the new growth and bent it over, and that's called layering a hedge. And as the other side was a meadow used for the grazing cattle, it's often layered, and one or two of the farm workers here were absolutely ace at doing it. It looked as though they'd wrecked the hedge. They'd actually have a saw or use the bill hook and cut two-thirds of the way through the hawthorn stem, which would be 2 or 3 inches thick, bend it over and kind of weave it in, and then it would carry on growing, but almost in a horizontal fashion rather than a vertical one. But now, because the labour's all gone, all the people that worked here either retired or died, and they were succeeded by larger and larger machinery each year. And eventually you had mechanical hedge cutters, which to start with were quite crude. Basically, it was a similar cutter bar that you'd use for cutting your hay. It'd have fingers on it with a reciprocating knife going through the fingers, and that would snip off growth up to about a half to three quarters of an inch thick. After that, you had to do it by hand. But then the new generation of hedges came along in the early 1970s, which were flail hedges. And then they got quite heavy. And there's one company that actually made one called the Bomford Bushwhacker. And it just literally shredded the hedges and caused a lot of controversy. But the alternative was to do it by hand. So if somebody complained too much, you'd give them one of these bill hooks or a slasher, and they said, okay, have a go. And after 10 minutes, you'd get the handle back again, and you had to get on with it. So there is, the new machines are far more sensitive. We have one now which reaches out well over 20 feet, probably 24 feet. It's a long reach hedger, and it has very light flails on. So if you cut about every third year, and we do around about a third of the hedges here every year at the farm. Now, that takes 3 weeks to do a third of them, because, wait for it, there's well over 27 miles of hedgerow just on this farm, many of them newly planted, which this one is. So this has been in close to 20 years, and it is absolutely draped with berries this year. It's one of those years. Out in the woodland, the beech trees are doing the same. They've draped down. We call that a mast year. Acorns on the oak trees. Well, there's avenues all over the farm. There's 1,500 individual oak trees here at High Ash Farm, and many of them have a full crop of acorns. So what's happened? The old boys will say, well, we've got to pay for this. That'll be a really cold winter, and nature's putting it right. But actually, it's the other way around. It is the weather over late winter and early spring that provided the ideal pollination period for these plants to come into flower. The insects were flying, and there would have been an insect sort of land on this particular twig, which I'm holding. What have I got here? Just in my hand, it's 18 inches long, and there's probably 70 odd hawthorn berries on there. And as they ripen, they become deep, deep red. The leaves then drop off, and that exposes this red colour and this sort of bounty. And so the deal is, you come into flower, you attract the insects, that pollinates the flowers. They then develop into these tiny little green buds about the size of a match head, and over the summer months the photosynthesis from the leaves provide the energy, and that helps fill the buds, and you have these berries forming. I'm just going to take one off. There's two species of hawthorn in the UK. One's called the Midland hawthorn, which is found more often in the northern part of the UK. And if I use my fingernails and just open the berry up like this, there's one very large seed in, and that tells me it's English hawthorn. There it is. It's not a drupe. That is the seed which will germinate, and if it's eaten by birds, all the better, because birds have grit in their gizzard to grind up their food. They don't have teeth, obviously. They have beaks, so the only way they can digest the food is to grind it up in the gizzard. That then comes out as a dropping. The birds fly off and excrete what they've eaten during the day overnight. And if they're perched in a hedge where there's no hawthorn, these can germinate and grow up, and you have self-establishment. That's that rotation of nature, natural history, which is this the big circle of life which everybody is sort of fascinated by at the moment.
Food for the birds as well, then.
Yes, it is. But the deal is, the birds eat the berries, and the berries then get distributed, because the hawthorn can't spread its own berries if they just drop on the ground. They can be eaten by small mammals, of course. And we've got rose hips here as well, look. Just beautiful orange there, full of seeds. So that's
about two or three times the size of the...
Absolutely, yeah. Full of vitamin C, so not only nutritious.
Those are red as well.
Yeah, they're red, very deep orange. And as the season goes on, you can actually see where the flowers were. This is the dog rose, Rosa canina. There's the spines to prove it, on the thorns on the hedge there. And it's absolutely, perhaps have 20, 30 little flat seeds in there, unlike the English hawthorn, which has a single seed. And they'll also get eaten by, ouch, that one's got hold of me, like, and
you'll want danger money, see?
Yes, I know. But that's the foundation of a really good hedge. So it's been allowed to grow. It's only been cut once in its 20 years, and it's growing away really, really well. So
I think those swallows are following us. They're
yes, they're
swooping
all
down over the field.
All over the farm at the moment. Any crops which are coming into flower, so our overwinter wild bird seed mixers are now in full flower, is sown very late, and so that's got lots of insects in it, and again it's fodder for those swallows. But an almost complete absence of swifts this year, and I think a little later on in this podcast we'll be answering some of the questions, and one of those is concerning swifts, which are not just absent from High Ash Farm but further afield. Yes, we can see a swallow just skimming over at great speed there. That's an adult just busily gathering up insects to feed to the young. And some of them, of course, are now on their southern migration from the northern part of the UK. They've done their single brood, which they often do in northern climes, sort of from northern England, North Yorkshire, right up into Scotland. One brood of swallows, and they're on their southern migration already.
There's those swallows down there. Look, there's four or five of them, yes, and they're almost flying inside the crop.
Yes, they are. All Almost, yes. So some of the crops here, there's a whole variety of them. There's barley, millet, fodder radish, mustard, and all of those are in flower, just attracting the birds and therefore the insects there. And they're just feeding up as they go. Because they've got this long migration, it's not such a hasty affair going southwards in the autumn as it is in the spring. That urge to get up to the UK to nest is really, really strong in the birds. And these ones, it's a much more leisurely, southerly journey for them. Remember, they got to go across the Mediterranean. And then even in North Africa, the Tunisia area, there's been some incredibly high temperatures there. Insect numbers are very low, and that's where they need to kind of stock up their batteries, if you like, to get some subcutaneous fat, because the Sahara is a huge challenge for them. And if they're going to hit a wind coming from the south off the Sahara, they're flying into that. Of course, they've got no knowledge of the weather there at that time of the year, so it's incredibly hazardous for them going down and, of course, coming back, which is why when the swallows arrive in the first week of April here at Ash Farm, I do a whoop and I just welcome them back as though it's a special day, which it is for me.
I open the gate and I know where we are, Chris. Rat, don't go on the road. This is one of my favourite parts of your farm here, Chris, and this is the orchard.
Yes. 1987, Matthew, the morning 16th of October, we had the hurricane, and I'm just going to call Rat here. Rat.
He doesn't know his green cross code necessarily, so don't go too close to the road. The sun is beating down here, and looking into the orchard, I can see, well, just like the berries on the trees we were looking at just now in the hedges, these trees in the orchard are absolutely festooned with fruit. This is a masked year for fruit as well.
Absolutely. We're sort of celebrating the crops of the Norfolk countryside at the moment, and I tried to replicate partly what was here after that terrible morning of 1987. This was covered in very large cedar trees, a dozen of them, some Scots pine, which are well over 100 feet tall, and on top of a hill, and the whole lot keeled over in that sort of semi-hurricane we had. And I thought, oh, well, I'll try and get an asset out of a huge problem. So we chopped up all the cedar trees and had a massive digger come in, close to 30 tons, dug huge holes all over where we are and put all the trees down into the clay, covered them up. It was the only way, bearing in mind on that night we had 1,500 mature trees blown over here at the farm. Took 3 years to clear it up. So I looked at the area of ground, it's quite close to the farmhouse where I was born, and I decided to put an orchard here. There was one tree here underneath the cedar trees, which had always fascinated me as a child, and my mother used to make jelly from it. And here it is. It flowers, not like an apple tree, but like a rose, and it's a British native tree.
They look like small apples that have then burst.
Yes, that's a good description.
And there's like prickly edges.
Yes, and it's called a medlar, and it is a British native, but the fruit is sort of pretty well inedible. But I did learn a little bit about it, because in the dictionary, one of my earlier dictionaries, it had a special word that you could make jam or jelly from the fruit when it was rotten. And it was called blet, B-L-E-T. And I did annoy my mother-in-law at the time by putting blet in the Scrabble. And she challenged that word. And it was in my dictionary. So
it's 1-0 to Chris.
It was at that time, yes. And she stamped her foot on the ground and didn't forgive me for that. But it's a British native. And the rest of it, I've sort of planted out with rows of traditional fruit trees. And I've put in about 70 fruit trees, most of which are tiered southwards. So the tall varieties are on the north side, and they're things like the Bramley apple. The centre row would be eating apples, Cox's Orange Pippin in particular, some James Grieve, and then the front row, conference pears mixed in with the plum trees, of which there's literally hundreds of them here. And they are draped, absolutely draped with plums this year. It's just an extraordinary crop. Just,
I think this branch here has already been picked.
Yes, I've had the camera here, and quite often, early in the morning, I've seen a pair of legs, which is one of the liveries coming in and gathering the plums, and they know they can do that. So I do tease them, and I sort of ask them, whose legs are these? And you can see the stake where the camera's on. And what happened here is the badgers come in at night together with deer, and rabbits will eat them, but the badgers will come in and scoff perhaps 20 of these very large Victoria plums without stopping, and then they trot off looking very distended. But to eat 20 of them in a single go, and out on the farm I sometimes find the badger latrines often quite close to the set, and you'll see in the latrines at this time of year they're very sort of toilet tidy animals. You'll see all these plum stones, so the stones actually go through. They're actually called droops because the stones themselves don't germinate. It's a seed inside the plum.
Well, I don't blame the badgers. They look very appetizing. They've got a beautiful red blush on them.
Yes.
And these are Victoria?
All Victorias,
these. Do you mind if I have a sample?
No, go on then. Here we go. Look, just try. That one I just touched and it dropped off before I got there. There you go. Just try that.
Right, just bite in.
You can do plum crumbles, which are one of my favourite.
Look at the flesh.
Look at that. It's bright yellow flesh in there and really ripe and just about at their peak at the moment. Again, sort of usually well into September before I'd think of gathering these.
Oh, but these are fantastic.
They really are. The sugar content this year, it's just one of those years where everything sort of fitted together. They got pollinated. There wasn't some late frosts, which sometimes damages the blossom. But it's one of those celebrations, and as it's only sort of 50 yards from my house, it's really lovely to have this on the doorstep. So if I fancy making plum crumble, I've just made two large ones, one of which I've frozen, and it's just so easy to do, and it's right on the doorstep. But there's so many here. I've already given away 25 kilos to the local food bank who've come and gathered it on two or three occasions and put it out for the public at the various distribution points they have, and they go like hotcakes. So it's none of it's going to waste. But you can see on the ground, quite shortly, the hornets will be here feasting on the crop on the ground, because quite a proportion of them have dropped off already, and also just waiting for the later warmer weather later on in the week. The Red Admiral butterflies get addicted to the sugary solution on the plums, and that then, if they get a little bit of soil on them, you then have the soil yeast acting and you have very weak alcohol. So unusually, the Red Admiral butterflies are very shy, but in this case you can walk right up to them and get some really good photographs because they're slightly tipsy. So,
well, I'm about to go and see my parents, who only live up the road here.
Excellent.
In the next village.
Yes.
I mean, if I was to speak nicely to you, Chris, would I be able to take a little punnet of these plums
right
for them?
Well, what we'll do, we'll get you a bucket, so we'll do even better. Look just the other side where one of my liveries hasn't been able to reach. That is draped. I mean, it's a purple tree.
It's virtually touching the ground,
it
isn't
is.
It, that bough?
It has broken some of the branches here.
Look at these catching the sun over
yes,
here. They are
they're
beautiful.
Just glorious, aren't
and
they?
And the taste is, I mean, it's sweet, but you've got complexity. You've got a little tartness in there
yes.
as well.
Oh,
it's really lovely.
Absolutely, yes. Only the best at High Ash. No, it's just such a delight to grow your own, and what a privilege it is as well.
How are the apples this year, by the way?
Yeah, fantastic crop. Just look down there. That's Cox's Orange Pippin, just ahead of us. Look at that. There's what? The tree's about 12, 14 feet high, so they're not large. And, well, probably 500 Cox's on that tree alone. So I hope this is replicated across the UK. It's a really good soft fruit and top fruit year this year. So just a celebration, really. And that gale, yeah, Every cloud has a silver lining is one of the old mottos. But just look up in the canopy of this Victoria. It's been allowed to grow up, and the branch there is broken and is hanging down, but that branch is still intact, and there's probably 2 or 3 stone of plums hanging up there. So if I get you a ladder as well, Gudge, would you like to gather some for me?
Well, you know, of course I would. But I see you haven't got a ladder handy. So.
No, I think we can gather enough off the ground. So,
well, there's lots on the ground already that have fallen down. And
there is.
Those are for the badgers.
Yeah, they're for the badgers and the wildlife. Yep, perfect.
And rats, does he... Hello, rat, do you...
Carrots are his thing. Yes, so if you've got a carrot, he'll spend the rest of the morning chewing and biting. Come on, rat, let's answer some questions.